And our goal is to spend some time exploring some of the texts and lyrics of songs through the last decades that particularly relate to the real questions of life, songs that don't always give answers to those questions, but which lead us to think about them. And then, of course, our goal is to put them in the perspective of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So 2 weeks ago, we had Gimme Shelter from the Rolling Stones, and I don't remember the song from last week because I wasn't here, but hopefully many of you were here and enjoyed that one. Today we're doing a Simon and Garfunkel song, which of course is a kind of an easy one to think about. A number of people who sent in requests mentioned Simon and Garfunkel, so I'm doing Simon and Garfunkel, but I'll be choosing one of their songs. Simon and Garfunkel were really famous in the late 60s, early 70s. They had known each other since elementary school in 1953. Their very first big hit, which many of you remember, was Sounds of Silence. And their first record album, no, it wasn't their first, it was their second record album, was called The Sounds of Silence, the LP vinyl. And I will tell you that that is the first LP vinyl that I ever bought. That was my absolute very first one. My first 45 RPM was the Beatles, was Eleanor Rigby on one side and Yellow Submarine on the other. But my first long play LP was vinyl, was Sounds of Silence. You may remember the film Graduate. Simon and Garfunkel produced the music for that, including the very famous Mrs. Robinson. Bridge Over Troubled Waters, which is the one we're going to listen today, was the song, I'll tell a little bit about that in a second, but it was actually the song that kind of broke them up. They had a very tumultuous relationship for all of their career. They just didn't get along very well, and they broke up a number of times, and then they would come back together and play together, but it just never seemed to click. And Garfunkel later said about Simon that he was the person who most enriched my life by putting these songs through me. And Simon responded, "Arthur and I agree about almost nothing, but it's true. I have enriched his life quite a bit." And later, Simon said, "I regret the ending of our friendship. I hope that someday before we die, we will make peace with each other," adding after a pause, "but there's no rush." So they really had a very tumultuous relationship. One other comment about Paul Simon. If you really want to see Paul Simon at almost his best, there's a film, it's a documentary called Graceland, the concert in Zimbabwe. I believe it's from 1988. Paul Simon, it was the time of apartheid in South Africa, and so Paul Simon with Ladysmith, Black Mambazo, Miriam Makeba, and Hugh Masekela put on a live concert in Zimbabwe, and it's absolutely spectacular. If you ever have the chance to look at it, if you're a Paul Simon fan at all, combined with the African scenario, it's just really great. But the song we're going to look at today and listen to is Bridge Over Troubled Water. And it was a song that Paul Simon actually wrote. He wrote it from a spiritual that he was listening to. And the spiritual gave him a line. And from that line, he developed this song kind of alone in his room with his guitar. And he said, "I have no idea where it came from. It just came all of a sudden. I remember thinking, this is considerably better than what I usually write." And, of course, it was written in the late 60s, and it was written during the complex and convoluted and controversial political and economic and social things that were happening during that time. The interesting thing about this song is, and I hadn't realized this until I researched it this week, but as soon as you hear it, you'll realize it's true. The person who sings the song is Art Garfunkel. Paul Simon doesn't sing on it. It's just Art Garfunkel. Paul Simon wrote the lyrics, wrote the song, gave it to Art Garfunkel to sing, and said, "I want you to sing this song." And Garfunkel kind of protested about that. He said, "Yeah, but we sing songs together, and why should I take this song?" And Paul Simon insisted that Garfunkel sing the song, but that always led to tension between them because Garfunkel always felt like he was taking Paul's song, and Paul actually had some regrets as he watched Garfunkel really make something of this song that he wasn't up on stage playing this song. So this song actually was one of the catalysts that led to their breakup. Garfunkel said later in life, he's obviously still alive, but later he says, "I've sung this song 6,400 times, and every time I get a little visitation of the power of a great song to say, whoever you are, if you need some solace, I will try to be a moment of sweetness for you. This kills me. To be the lucky one to express that, it moves me every time." So I'm going to play for you "The Bridge Over Troubled Water." What I'm doing during this series is always trying to play the original version of the song as it came out, but I'm not going to do that this time. I'm going to play the version that Garfunkel sung during the concert, the live concert in Central Park, which I believe was in 1981. They gave Simon and Garfunkel gave a free concert in Central Park. 500,000 people attended. And it's about an hour and a half. You can also find that on YouTube very easy if you'd like to just go back with memory lane. One of the striking things about that concert, if you notice it, is that Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel during that concert have no contact with each other. They're standing up there and they don't look at each other. They don't talk to each other. They're just in their own little bubbles, but singing, of course, very beautiful. You will, of course, only see Art Garfunkel on here because he's the only one that sings it. One other little comment. The third verse starts with the words, which most of you will know, "Sail on, Silver Girl." That was a comment on the beginning gray hair of Paul Simon's girlfriend, who later became his wife. So that "Sail on, Silver Girl" refers to the gray hairs that were growing in her on her head at that particular time. I'm assuming she was young and they were premature. So enjoy this song. I would like to I'm not putting the text on it. Because number one, I think most of you know it, and I'll repeat pieces of it later. But I'd like you to also just note the exquisite, I think it's actually exquisite, the way Art Garfunkel uses his mouth as an instrument. It comes very clearly through in this video. So enjoy "A Bridge Over Troubled Water," Art Garfunkel, concert in Central Park, 1981.
Thank you.
when you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all. I'm on your side when times get rough and friends just can't be found. When you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I will take your part. When darkness comes and pain is all around. Sail on, silver girl, sail on by. Your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine. Oh, if you need a friend, I'm sailing right behind. Like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. You don't need to have me spend any time at all to think about the times in which we're in and the troubled waters in which we find ourselves. Again, that's on every level of our society, from the very personal level. Some of us are experiencing personally different kinds of crises and different kinds of struggles and different kinds of tensions and different kinds of worries. And of course, in our families and in our communities and in our counties and states and countries and the world, there's this swirl of troubling water that's around us. And Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel say, I'll be there. I'll be there. Your bridge. And not only that, it's not just a bridge. It's, and I found this very striking, I will lay me down. I will lay myself down for you and for us. And that made me think of a scripture text that I'm sure most of you know, if not all of you, from 1 John chapter 3. It's going to be projected. This is John, the disciple whom Jesus loved, who heard Jesus talk about love and how Jesus called his disciples and his people together. And John writes this, by this we know love, that he, that is Jesus, laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth. Jesus lays down his life for us. And how does he do that? Well, it's not only on the cross. That's a piece of it. But this, again, very familiar passage from Philippians chapter 2, which also should be projected. Says this about Jesus. Though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself. By taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Jesus didn't just die on the cross. He didn't just lay himself down in the grave. He emptied himself of his own glory. He became a servant. A servant is one who does not have command over his own coming and going, but is there solely to serve the other. And of course, one of the big images of that that John must be remembering as he as John thinks about Christ laying down his life for us, is Jesus washing the feet of the disciples. Jesus, the creator of the world, Jesus who is God of very God, kneeling down and washing the feet of his disciples, humbling himself. The highly exalted God stoops down, humbles himself, in the words of Psalm 113 that we talked about a few weeks ago. He is obedient. He's obedient to his father. He's obedient to the authorities around him. He gives his allegiance to the father. And in his death, he lays himself down and takes upon himself and upon his shoulders all of the evil of the world. This is what it means, and it's just a rich, deep thing, that Jesus laid down his life for us. What does this do for us? How does this help us in troubled times? Well, basically, I think there's one main thing to say with a couple of smaller things. The main thing is that Jesus is Lord. That the evil forces of the world are not Lord. That your own personal worries and concerns, as well as those that you have for our state and for our country and for our world, the empire is not Lord. Jesus is Lord. And because of his life, death, and resurrection and ascension, Jesus has broken the back of evil and broken the back of empire. And that means that that empire will never have the last word. COVID-19 will never have the last word. The election of any particular party or individual, whatever you may think of it, will never have the last word. Some dictator somewhere over across the other end of the world will never have the last word. The multinationals and those people that run the world's economies and world societies, or at least attempt to, will never have the last word. They are not Lord. Jesus is. Because of that, we know that we are not alone. Jesus stooped down, emptied himself, came upon earth, and took our burdens upon himself. We are not alone. You are not alone, and we are not alone. It also means that there is reconciliation. God, in the verses of in the text in Colossians 1, God is, through Jesus, reconciling all things to himself. Whatever brokenness you are facing right now, again, whether it's very personal, in the middle of a personal relationship, or whether you think our society is fundamentally broken or our world is fundamentally, whatever brokenness you experience, know this, that God is working in Jesus to reconcile all things to himself. And that that brokenness doesn't have the last word. And there is rest. You remember the words of Psalm 23. He leads us in green pastures. He leads us beside the still waters. And from Matthew 11, come to me, says Jesus, all who labor and are heavy laden and are worried and are burdened, and I will give you rest. I'm not saying this is easy to find, this rest, but it really is there. And Jesus offers it, and it is findable. Through the struggle to come to the place where in the middle of whatever turmoil you find yourself in, Jesus can give you rest. So when Art Garfunkel sings, I will lay me down, the only reason that anybody can really lay themselves down for another is because Jesus in the first place laid himself down for us. If Jesus had not done that, there is no way that I would unselfishly lay myself down for another. You know that we humans love each other, if we're just operating out of our flesh, for what I can get out of it. I love you because you do this and that for me. And that's one of the main themes of a lot of classic rock and roll, as well as love stories and songs of all time. I love you so much because you make me feel so good. That's not what the Bible is talking about. The Bible is talking about love that empties itself, that lays itself down for the other. And unless Jesus is intervening in our lives and hearts to change them from the selfish focus into really being willing to focus on another and lay our lives down, we're not going to get it. That's why it's so important as we think about how to lay our lives down for one another, that we root ourselves in the love of Jesus and understand what he has done for us by laying his life down and being that bridge over troubled water. And that's where I gather the strength and the courage and the resources that I need to be able to lay myself down for the other. John, I'll just repeat the last couple of sentences of what John wrote in verse 3. After he talks about Jesus laying down his life for us, he says, "We ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him?" If anyone has the world's goods, which every single one of us listening today does, we're the richest 1% in the history of the world, every single one of us here. Regardless of your personal finances, you belong to the richest 1% that's ever lived in the whole history of the world. If anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, if there's any people that can see our brother in need through internet, we can. We can see webcams of fighting in the streets of Yemen or the streets of Hong Kong or the streets of Minneapolis. We can watch it live as it happens. We see those needs. We can see the hungry. We can see the sick. We can see the dying. We can see the refugees. We can see all these people. If anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, closes his doors, dare I say, closes his borders. Whenever we close our hearts against those in need, we're divorcing ourselves from this self-emptying, obedient, self-sacrificial love of Christ. And we're feeding into empire. And we're becoming selfish. And the gospel wants to turn us in a total other direction. They know, it's not about you. It's not about you first. It's about the other. You who have. If you see your brother in need, and yet you close your heart against him, how in the world can the God who gave up his own son for you, how can the love of that God abide in you? Little children, let us not love in word or in talk, but in deed and in truth. If you look at your world in this way and say, again, to use the words of the song, I'm going to lay myself down. I'm going to be your bridge over troubled waters. It is going to cost you. It is going to cost you sleepless nights. It's going to cost you time. It's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you energy. It's going to cost you hospitality. Little tiny example. One of the things that's been so amazing to all of us in this whole COVID time is the fact that all these households around America that I know, especially around here, are taking in dogs. All these dogs that need rescue are now being rescued. And I know there's all kinds of motives for that. But it's just an amazing, amazing thing. Now people have the time and the space. and they're offering their hospitality, their home, what they call, of course, a forever home, to these dogs that need them so bad. It may cost you a room or a place or some dog hairs or some broken plumbing. That's what we're talking about. Loving in word, in deed, and in truth. It may cost you the cost of confrontation. Because true love does not say, oh, you're doing this, and that's okay. Go ahead. True love confronts. It always does it on the basis of a bridge of trust. It doesn't do it when the trusted relationship isn't there. It doesn't destroy that trust. But when the trust is there, true love confronts. True love says, you know what you said yesterday? That hurt me. True love says, you know, the way you're spending your money, I wonder about that. I have questions about that. True love says, the way you dealt with that colleague at work, or you dealt with your son, or you dealt with your parent, is that really what you want to do? Here's how it came over to me. True love costs the pain of being willing to confront. Because the love of God, as shown in Jesus, does not just pretend everything's okay. You're okay, I'm okay, as long as we float along. No, true love breaks into real life. Brings up sin, points it out, confronts it, and deals with it. True love, laying down your life, will make you vulnerable. You know those famous words that they just came into my head now, so I can't quote them exactly, of C.S. Lewis about love making people vulnerable. If you take your love and just put it in a vault and don't put it out there where it can get hurt, it will die. True love is vulnerable. And vulnerability is sometimes very, very painful. True love will produce tears. Remember Jesus on that donkey riding into Jerusalem weeping, saying, would that you, even you, Jerusalem, had known on this day the things that make for peace. You will weep if you really love when you see a broken relationship, when you see the pain caused by a COVID death, when you see people in rafts on the Mediterranean Sea, or wherever it is. Every Friday evening, PBS NewsHour, at the end of their news broadcasts, have about a five-minute section that they call In Memoriam. And they show five, maybe six, four to six, something like that, brief stories of people who have died from COVID-19. A variety, it's very diverse, old, young, all kinds of people. And literally every Friday night I watch that, and literally every Friday night I have a lump in my throat and a tear in my eye. And people from all walks of life have passed away, most of them way too early, and leaving family behind. Love produces tears. Remember Jesus at the grave of Lazarus, that famous verse of the Bible, the shortest verse of the Bible, and Jesus wept. But Jesus didn't always only weep at that grave. He snorted with anger. Jesus saw the weeping of Mary and of the Jews who had come with her, and he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled, and the Greek expression that's there means that he snorted with anger. True love will produce anger. The Bible's full of it. Anger against injustice. Anger against the pain that people cause other people. Anger against death. If you really love, you will be, to some degree, a righteously angry, not selfishly angry, but righteously angry person. This love we're talking about is not milquetoast. It encompasses our whole emotions. It encompasses all of whom we are. And when we love in this way, rooted in what Jesus did for us, that's a reason to get up in the morning. As hard as it is for us to grasp it, hard as it is for us to incorporate it into our life, this is the reason to get up in the morning. That I have the opportunity as one being called by God to lay down my life for the other and to go into this world and love and laugh and weep and cry and spend my money and spend my time and spend my energy and be angry at injustice and fight against it and fight for what's right and stand up for the marginalized. All of that, because that's exactly what Jesus did for each and every one of us as individuals and for all of us as his people. When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are dry, I will dry them all. I'm on your side. When times get rough and friends just can't be found, when you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I will take your part. When darkness comes and pain is all around, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. I invite you to know in new ways this self-emptying love of Jesus, and then to experience in new ways what it is to lay down your life and be this bridge for those around you. Amen.